Welcome to The Reload, where we help unconventional leaders craft the life they truly want by questioning the assumptions they have about how life works. My name is Sean, and I'll be your host on this journey. As a performance coach and special operations combat veteran, I help high-performing executives kick ass in their careers while connecting with deeply powerful insights that fuel their lives. I don't have anything funny to say as my little intro today. So, here we are. These are the perils of recording in your home office, where you are doing nothing but staring at a set of drapes. Not the most stimulating recording environment, but I do the best I can to make sure we have clear audio. Well, with that little brief aside finished, let's go ahead and look at what we're talking about today. Now, a while back, somebody messaged me on LinkedIn, and they were talking about how they are very harsh with themselves. And they reflected on their heritage and in the global scheme of things on this planet Earth, this particular lineage or heritage is sort of stereotypically regarded as having very, 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 very high standards. But that one of the things that comes with that is amazing products. Extremely well-built, refined, highly functional, and just the highest quality. And so in this message, there was an observation around some of the benefits that can come from being really harsh and exacting with oneself, but also an acknowledgement that on a sort of a human level, that it causes pain, that it really amounts to punishment. And so today I thought we would take a look at this balance between a mastery mindset versus punishment. And where is it that we sort of dance in and out of that duality, if you will? Is it possible for us to begin to strive for mastery without having it turn into something toxic, without having it turn into punishment? Given the work that I do, I would like to believe that that is possible. So we might be mired in my own implicit bias here, given that I am a performance mindset coach. But if you don't like it, you can always go to a different show. But I hope you stay. So let's look at this for a second. If we can sort of tacitly agree that improvement, before we start to layer any sort of qualifiers in there, but just generally that improvement is a good thing. Evolution, the path to enlightenment, you know, that ultimately we can see that there is benefit in making ourselves and our tomorrow better than our today. And certainly better than our yesterday. What then is it that causes us to tip over into something that is punishing? So for that, I think what we end up looking at is lessons learned from maestros. And quite frequently, I think it is the arts where we receive the most examples of kind of this mastery mindset. And I have no idea why, in all honesty. Perhaps it's because there is something that, you know, many people find beautiful or inspiring about art and its creation, and that perhaps on some intangible and intuitive level, we have this connection to art being something that cannot fully be perfected versus something that is scientific or mechanical or calculated, you know, that somehow that could be mastered to the finest degree, and that we would be able to reach a place where we would never be able to make it better. I don't know. It's kind of a off-the-cuff assessment of mine, that when we look at art, being artistic, artistic processes, creativity, the boundlessness of creativity, I think, is woven in there as to why it can never be fully perfected. But to me, this is a critical ingredient to this discussion of looking at mastery mindset, and where is it that we can keep that virtuous feeling versus having it reach a place of punishment. And to me, when, you know, when I work with clients, one of the things that we talk about is, how do we stay in a place of loving the process? So when we look at punishing ourselves, very frequently, what I notice in clients is that they have shifted from looking at the process and looking at how they can be in a place of joy with their participation in that process. They've shifted away from that to final outcome. And does it look like it's supposed to look? And who is informing how it's supposed to look? Well, they are. Or our parents, or our partner, or our boss, or the board of directors, or the, you know, shareholders, or analysts, market analysts, or whoever. But we drift, sometimes consciously, mostly unconsciously, away from the love of the game, so to speak. And when we look at case studies of some of the world's most accomplished maestros in music or painting, yeah, we often see very robust struggle. This desire to perfect a certain movement. We also see it in sports. They are in love. These masters are in love with their craft, their art. Whether their art is actual art, as in a painting, or it's a work of art in terms of their movement. Whether it's dance or whether it's sport. There are even martial artists. I mean, the term martial art. Again, we are connected to the sense that they are in love with perfecting it. And that they can, yes, have very high standards. But that ultimately, one of the key differentiating factors is that they view the process and their involvement in the process as their prime focus. How can I make each rep better than the last one? Not so that I'll have this finished masterpiece that I can hang on somebody's wall and sell for $1 million, but so that I can feel inside myself the living embodiment of my expression. That I am the implement of something higher. We are so often deeply inspired when we see somebody who is quote-unquote in the zone, whether it's, again, in sport or in art, and we watch them. Just immediately, one of the examples that came to mind was Michael Jordan, who was an American basketball player, professional basketball player in the NBA. And there was a game where he was sinking every single shot from anywhere, even with multiple defenders trying to keep him from scoring. He was just, I mean, you just put the ball in his hand and it just sort of magically went through the hoop as if it was fate almost. And there's a scene, one of the cameras catches him after making this just crazy shot, and he's looking at somebody on the sidelines and he's shrugging his shoulders and he's got his hands up and this look on his face of like, he doesn't even know what's happening. And so there's this connection to something beyond ourselves, outside of ourselves, or at least outside of our normal selves. And I would venture to guess that you have also had times in your life where you were outside of yourself. You know, this is one of the things that seems to be strengthened in habitual meditators, is their capacity to move beyond an immediate set point of self. And that's actually something that longtime and dedicated meditators have experienced, is that meditation, and I'll link to an article in Forbes, but this article in Forbes talks about a study that was done at Yale University. And one section of the article reads as follows. Meditation reduces activity in the brain's quote-unquote me center. One of the most interesting studies in the last few years carried out at Yale University found that mindfulness meditation decreases activity in the default mode network, DMN, the brain network responsible for mind wandering and self-referential thoughts, aka, quote-unquote, monkey mind. And it's this capacity to tap into something beyond ourselves, beyond our own worries, beyond our own sense of self, that we have an access point to really harnessing the power of being in love with the process, being in love with the process of expressing the art. And for those of you who say, oh, I mean, I'm in the corporate world and I'm a corporate power player. Well, you too have an art. Or, well, I'm just in product design. Well, you definitely have an art. I mean, you're designing things. But whether you are a negotiator, or whether you are a police officer, or whether you are a cook, anything, hell, even coaches, for that matter, we all have an art that we can express. And we can want to be better at that art. And if we stay connected to process, and if we stay connected to a certain innocence and a certain awe and wonder about, well, oh, what if I tried it this way? Instead of getting so fixated and so attached to the way that it's supposed to be, or to making X number of dollars, then we end up in that space where we can actually really truly love what we do. And we can bypass the punishment, the feeling of punishment. And we bring ourselves back into alignment with creation. And it's not that we don't strive to do better, because oftentimes people confuse that. And they think, oh, well, you know, if I'm just here to love the process, then I can be as messed up as I want to be all day long, every day, and never improve. Nope. We still strive to improve, but we do so without punishing ourselves. Can we be frustrated? Yeah, sure. Sure. I don't want to take all your tools away from you. So we can feel frustration. Maybe we weren't connected. So if we imagine that same Michael Jordan taking shots on the basket, might he be frustrated that he was perhaps distracted from his own body? That he didn't have the connection to the ball as it released? Sure. Can he know and be frustrated by the fact that he knows that he can do better? Yeah. Have at it. And if we can use that as fuel, as additional inspiration to continue to come back to our love of the game, our love of the process, our love of expressing the art, then so much the better. But again, it's when we fixate on, the ball didn't go through the basket, that we then become, or we invite ourselves to, the punishment party. So there are a couple other elements, I guess, that are worth noting, and I don't want to repeat them here, because I've done episodes on them not too long ago. One of them is episode 111, Unlearning Unforgiveness. And then also episode 109, Empathy versus Sympathy. Doesn't matter. And those episodes, I think, will help kind of round out this discussion. So if you haven't listened to them already, I invite you to. It'll help my download numbers, if nothing else. But ultimately, there's so much that we can accomplish. And what I see frequently in clients and in myself as well is ways in which we hold ourselves back from really trying, from really getting after it, because we are afraid of failure. We have that connection to the result that then serves as punishment. And in this case, the punishment is holding ourselves back from attempting something, from doing the thing we say we want, or doing the thing we know would be good for us. So punishment shows up in a lot of different ways. So don't get overly wrapped around the axle around the semantics of it. Just recognize that how you punish yourself can be in negative self-talk. It can be in self-harming behavior. It can also show up in being fired from a job for lack of performance because we were limiting ourselves. We either didn't seek out the help that we needed to better understand how to do the job because we were too afraid to ask. Or it can show up in any myriad of ways. But my strongest recommendation is to try as much as you can to stay connected to process. Have your high standards and then support those high standards with process, with practice, and with trying to stay focused on expressing your love for your art, whatever it is. That'll do it for today. If you have been enjoying the show, well, hell, if you've not been enjoying the show, subscribe, follow, share. That last one probably doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you do that if you're not enjoying the show? I don't know. Maybe it's provocative. Maybe what we're talking about here is provocative and you're thinking to yourself, I just don't like what he says. It's aggravating and it feels uncomfortable. Then great, it's doing its job. And maybe you want more of that in your life. And maybe you know somebody who would benefit from having that in their life as well. So subscribe, share, follow, or don't, totally up to you. Until next time, take care of each other.